Welcome into a special Big East Tournament post-game edition of the Dane and Victory podcast. I'm Rick. Dan is on the line, as is the legend, Brian Snow. Xavier has just knocked off Creighton 63-61 in the quarterfinals of the Big East Tournament. Guys, Zach Hankins tipped in Najee Marshall's putback attempt with about 21 seconds to go, and then Xavier's defense held as Kyle Castlin got a big block there on Tyshawn Alexander. This game, it kind of went the way we thought it needed to go for Xavier to get the win, didn't it, Brian?
Yeah, you know, none of us picked the win, but what we said needed to happen, happened. They limited Creighton. Creighton made 10 threes, but they needed 30 threes to get there. And then, Xavier, they didn't dominate on the glass, but they certainly did a good job on the glass, especially at the end. And then also limited turnovers. They were at 9 turnovers for the game. Kind of the things we all pointed to that they had to do, they did.
Yeah, and during the period of time, especially let's say in the first 25 minutes where they – or well, let's say the last 10 minutes of the first half and the first 10 of the second half where they kind of built the lead that they relinquished down the stretch, that was all built on dominating the paint, especially on offense. I think at one point – points in the paint were some was like a 20-point spread, and I think one of our guys sent us a pretty good at one point shots in the paint. Xavier was 11 of 19 and Creighton was only 4 of 10. I think that was at halftime or maybe slightly thereafter. So it just demonstrates that although the rebounds may not have been lopsided, Xavier was getting a lot more paint touches. They were getting a lot more opportunities in the paint. And that got them through in a game where they couldn't hit the broad side of the barn from three. I think they were 4 of 18 for 22%.
Which isn't good if you're scoring at home.
No, it's not. Which stat is more surprising to you? That Tyreek Jones scores 0 points and Xavier gets the win, or that Xavier goes 9 minutes of regulation without a field goal and gets a win?
I would say Tyreek Jones, simply because if you said, like, how does Xavier beat Creighton, you would think it's Tyreek Jones, you know, just kicking ass and taking names in the paint, which just did not happen. I mean, he picked up an early foul, got out of rhythm, couldn't make a little, you know, jump hook, just never got it going. And you know, not everyone can be perfect every game, so Hankins stepped up. But I would, if you would have told me Xavier went through a long scoring drought and won, I could have believed it, because this team does have the personnel to kind of mess with Creighton, as we've seen. But if you would have told me Tyreek got zero, I'd have been like, well, they lost.
Two observations from what you said, Rick. The first one about Tyreek is, as Snow said, especially in the first 5 minutes, I thought Xavier on the whole looked wound way too tight. Like they weren't playing with any kind of flow or feel. They just felt like the moment was almost too big for them. And I think Tyreek, unfortunately, you know, he's the emotional leader of the team, and sometimes they go as he goes. And he in particular started out the game and just seemed like he was way too wound up, wasn't playing his usual game. And as Snow said, you know, he got a foul and then he missed a bunny. And then he missed another bunny, and now all of a sudden he's going over the back. It seems like every time down the court he turned the ball over. So yeah, Tyreek's struggles definitely exemplified what Xavier was struggling with early. Obviously, they got that worked out. The other thing I was going to say with the extended scoring drought, I was curious if you guys thought this as well, that and I know there's a reason why they did it, and I get why they did it, and it was successful in the main. But I did think that, especially, let's say, from the 15-minute mark to maybe the 6-minute mark of the second half, which coincided with that drought, that they were really almost exaggerating how slow they wanted to go on offense. And as a result, they just were getting horrible shots, and they didn't seem to be able to establish any rhythm at all. And I don't know if you guys think that's true, or maybe I'm just imposing a narrative on it because I knew that's what Xavier was going to try to do. But it seemed like they deliberately were trying to go slower at that point, and it robbed them of some of the aggressiveness that they played with when they were getting back into the game and building the lead.
I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. I think the issue was they couldn't find a way to get the ball inside. They couldn't get it on the block and then create off of that. Whether it was via the drive or via the pass, it just seemed the guards could not get Hankins the ball at that period of time, and that just threw everything all out of whack.
Dan, I mean, I do kind of agree with what you're saying, because they were over-exaggerating how slow they wanted to be, and they wouldn't take advantage of any type of transition opportunities or secondary breaks or anything like that, which, again, understandably so. But the reason I don't like playing like that in the way, you know, like UC typically does, we always dog on them for doing that, is for that exact reason. It's hard to get in any type of rhythm, especially if you have a team that doesn't shoot very well from the outside, like this Xavier team. So we kind of, we've talked about it, you know, since going back to the beginning of the season, the way this year's Xavier team needed to win is basically like a Mick Cronin-style team. Slow it down, make it a rock fight, beat you up in the paint, win on the glass, win at the free throw line. You know, big athletic tough guards that can defend you. That's kind of what this team needed to make its bread and butter, and we're finally getting to that point. And it was, I just still can't believe they went as long as they did without scoring and stayed in the lead that entire time. I just didn't, if you would have said that a month ago about this team's defense, it's hard to believe.
Part of it was that they had three or four of the best defensive possessions they've had all year, in my opinion.
Well, there was the one where Creighton got two offensive rebounds. I think Xavier was on defense for a minute and a half, and what, the third shot was just a turnaround air ball as time was expiring?
Yeah. There was another one where they basically kept them completely out of the lane. They blocked off every single attempt on it. They switched every ball screen perfectly, and Zagorowski had to, like, try, like, a running jump shot at the shot clock buzzer that barely touched the net. So there were a couple possessions like that during that period. And I thought that was key, Rick. You know, we always talk about limiting the damage when they go into a offensive slump. That was a 10-1 run or a 10-0 run over the course of 7 minutes. It could have been 20-0 if they hadn't been as attentive on defense. And really most of Creighton's points in that period were the few turnovers Xavier had. It seemed like the only time Xavier turned the ball over is when Creighton would bum rush the ball screen, and Xavier really never figured out quite how to beat it. Every time it was kind of hair raising. It seemed like every single guy that got stuck in that situation turned it over. Elias Hartman most spectacularly, but
yeah, I thought Elias figured it out. Just throw the ball behind you in the air, just flip out.
He only handed him the ball twice. I mean.
I think another thing from this game, you guys mentioned it, but we got to talk about it again, is that maybe not Wellage as much in this game, but Castlin and Hankins, the grad transfers, second straight game, they both came up huge for Xavier, particularly Castlin, who chipped in with some offense when Hankins at 20-some points. He was obviously the best player on the floor, but Castlin, who has been a role player for so long this year and kind of didn't score for like a month, all of a sudden you got back-to-back double digits games, and he had the biggest defensive play of the game when he blocked Tyshawn Alexander's shot that would have won it at the buzzer.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Castle, I mean, that block, first of all, that's a phenomenal block. I don't know about you guys. Real time, it looked like a foul.
I thought they had called a foul. I mean, because we didn't have the volume up that high, and everybody had kind of stopped. And I was kind of thinking, oh, man, they called a foul. But then I realized that that's because Quentin was just standing there with the ball waiting for the clock to expire.
Yeah, it looked like he got fouled, and then you see the replay. You're like, no, that's just an unbelievable block. And then, you know, he hits two threes. Now his third one was a fantastic air ball, but hits two threes. He's been really good for the last, couple weeks probably?
I mean, at least the last two games he's been very solid. He's a different person in terms of the confidence he played with. Like, he attacked a couple times today, and it's like, I remember, you know, the first, like, 10 conference games, I don't think he even looked at the rim. Like, he had only looked at his teammates when he was on the offensive end and hustled back on defense. So, you know, it's kind of fun to see guys like him and Hankins, you know, they make that leap and transfer to a place like this, and, you know, things don't go all that well for him initially, but it's cool to see him finish off strong that way.
Yeah.
How did you guys feel about the way Quentin Gooden played? Because I thought he had a really rough start. Had a couple, you know, customary brain farts on defense. But man, toward the end of the first half, he made some big plays for Xavier to help build that lead. And then I thought he was pretty good on defense and for most of the second half.
Yeah, I mean, what was it? I want to say Xavier was up 4 or 6 or something, and he just inexplicably left whoever he left on the near side wing.
Zagorowski.
Yeah, for a three. It was just like, what the hell are you doing? But overall, I mean, when the guy I know he shot 3 for 11 or whatever it was, but a lot of his shots when he misses, I'm not, you obviously aren't missing by design, but they're the kind of those runners around the rim that tend to be, for this Xavier team, a 50-50 offensive rebound chance. So I don't worry about his field goal percentage as much. The fact that he had zero turnovers, that, I mean, that's a win. When your point guard has zero turnovers, that unless he is just god-awful in every other aspect, that's a win from that position.
Quentin has to keep the defense honest, too, the way he did. Obviously, the two drives at the end of the first half on the two-for-one possessions were fantastic. But some of those other ones, like you're talking about Snow, where he gets around the rim and he misses it, it essentially becomes kind of a jump ball for the big men offensive rebound opportunity. Though he has to take advantage of some of those opportunities. Otherwise, the defense doesn't have to guard him. He has to be aggressive and make them pay attention to him because he is so athletic. And I thought he did a good job of picking his spots in this one. And the other thing about Quentin is he a lot of times ends up being the bailout guy. When they get to the end of the possession and it's 4 seconds left on the clock, the ball ends up going back out to him, and he launches three that everyone moans and groans about, but it's like, well, someone else was just going to be launching a desperation three too. You know, he's just in the spot to do it because he's going to be getting back on defense anyway. So he's 0 for 4 from three, but I didn't think all of those looks were like bad shots or anything like that. I thought he played a fine game, and aside from those, I think there were like two early slip-ups that you mentioned, Dan, defensively. Aside from that, I thought he was actually pretty good defensively, especially in the second half.
Before we move on to the Nova game, I wanted you guys to real quickly assess what you saw from Najee Marshall, whether or not he looked 100% to you, and how you thought he played. Obviously, he had some enormous plays down the stretch of this game, but I'm just curious how you guys evaluate his performance.
I thought physically he looked fine. He was just gassed as hell at the end. I mean, you could tell his conditioning, whether it was mentally or physically, just was not right. But I thought he moved fine. If I didn't know that he had tweaked his ankle, I wouldn't have thought he had a tweaked ankle.
Yeah, I saw people tweeting that he's clearly not right physically, and I disagreed with that because watching him defensively, I thought he moved laterally very well guarding Tyshawn Alexander. So I don't have much concerns about how his ankle is holding up, but I do agree that he looked very tired. So I wonder how he's going to feel tomorrow playing back-to-back. After he didn't look like he had his wind in the second half of this one. So that would be my concern.
I almost think that's a first game back thing. I mean, you don't lose your conditioning in a week. I mean, he's only been out realistically, what, 8 days?
No, I agree. But I mean, again, I just, you know, it's you also don't usually play back to back. Like if it was, if this was his next game on Sunday, I wouldn't have any concerns. But doing it back to back, I'm just interested to see how he responds. As well.
The good All thing right. is Tyreek will be well rested.
So guys, tomorrow night, Friday night I should say, I don't know when you all are listening to this, 6:30 p.m. tip, my favorite time, Xavier will play Villanova in the semifinal. The Wildcats beat Providence 73-62 today, behind a double-double from Eric Pascal, 20 points, 10 rebounds. Connor Gillespie had 19, including 5 threes for Villanova. Obviously Villanova, last time Xavier played them, the Musketeers produced one of their best efforts of the season, winning pretty comfortably at Cintas Center. I think this game, you know, we certainly feel like this game, a win for Xavier, puts them in the at-large conversation. It obviously would put them in the championship game, which would allow them an opportunity to eliminate the conversation altogether. What do you guys see as the keys to Friday night semifinal?
I think the key to stopping Villanova is Eric Pascal. Now, Phil Booth, you know, obviously you got to deal with him and you got to limit his threes and his good looks. But if Eric Pascal gets going, you have no shot, not for everybody, but for Xavier. So to me, like, Tyreek Jones has to really bounce back tomorrow. And I think Tyreek's probably one of the best matchups in the league for Pascal, because Pascal beats you more with his physicality than with his quickness. And Tyreek's moving well enough and he's in good enough shape where he can do that. And while Xavier's going to switch, there's no question about that. They kind of have ways of not switching Tyreek off of Pascal. And if they do, it's kind of Najee Marshall who takes him, and Najee can handle him to an extent as well. But the Musketeers have to find a way to keep Pascal in check. And then, you know, again, limit turnovers and annihilate Villanova on the offensive glass, because, you know, it's interesting. Villanova in the first match, or not the first matchup, the second matchup, they started going to Demir Cosby-Roundtree more. because they were getting crushed on the glass so much. And if you can make them go to Demir Cosby Roundtree, that's a win for Xavier. Not necessarily they're going to win the game, but that's what you want.
Yeah, but Villanova actually kind of got Xavier on the offensive glass in that second game, but part of it was because they were missing so many shots. They had bricked so many threes, they were getting a lot of long rebounds. Xavier definitely dominated in the paint in that game, and that's going to be the key again, is controlling the paint while just not getting killed on all of the stuff that we've talked about in the way Villanova attacked Xavier, which is those slipping screens, the same way we saw Creighton do a couple times today. Although I did think it was interesting in the Creighton game, we talked about Xavier wanting to switch probably in that game. A lot of it was because Hankins was on the floor for most of the game, but they actually did go with their normal hedging and recovering and did a
pretty
good
job. You can really just not listen to me, because I was convinced they were switching 1 through 5. They didn't. Did they do that at all?
I mean, at all? Well, no, because they started out the game with both bigs in, and then most of the rest of the game it was Hankins at the 5, and I just don't think they can do it with him there. So Villanova will probably be a different story. I just don't think you can play against Villanova's offensive system without switching all 5, because they will kill the hedge and recover stuff. But if Xavier is able to hold it down defensively the way they did today, they'll have a chance. And then it just becomes a matter of hoping Villanova doesn't kill you with threes. And Villanova changes. Like, they look like a different team today than they had the last few weeks, I thought. So it'll be interesting to see which Villanova team Xavier gets tomorrow.
So it looks like it's going to be probably a 5 or a 6 point spread. So I guess we'll make our picks here. All of us picked against Xavier in the quarterfinal. I will go first, and I will pick against Xavier in the semifinal, if for no other reason than pure avoidance of any kind of bad karma. And I think probably Nova wins this game. Probably I'll say it's a little bit lower scoring than maybe it's being called for. Maybe 70-66.
I'll take Villanova 65-61. I just think at the end of the day, you know, Booth's going to make a shot or Gillespie's going to make a couple shots, get going a little bit. And it's just a tough ass to ask Xavier to beat Villanova twice in a season, considering they've beaten them twice in a century. So I feel safe in saying, not feel safe, but I feel the odds are in my favor if I pick the Wildcats.
I'm going to go Xavier 69, Villanova 53. I think the Musketeers blow them out.
I feel like you're sending a message with that.
Nope.
I feel like there's some particular people you're sending a message to.
Just what I believe.
Well, let's ask this question then, Snow, just like we did yesterday. What does a Xavier win look like?
Much the same. Now, Xavier's going to have to shoot better. They can't shoot 4 for 22 from 3 and beat Villanova. Got to get to the foul line. You have to make probably about 35% from deep. Villanova cannot get offensive rebounds. And then Xavier can't turn it over.
Yeah, I think the big thing, again, is you're kind of just looking to hold them to like that sort of 35% or under mark from 3. If they're 10 of 30-ish, sort of, they're going to shoot that many. So if you hold them to about 10 to 12 threes, you'll have a chance to be in the game, I think, because Xavier will win inside. I don't think that's any doubt. So
Villanova was 10 of 31 today. If Xavier can hold Villanova to 10 of 31, they're going to have a chance.
Yeah,
agree. And I think what Snow said earlier is probably the biggest matchup is Tyreek Jones and Eric Pascal, making sure Jones can stay on the floor, making sure he can do enough offensively to merit a spot out there, given the way Hankins is scoring the ball right now. And then it's really going to fall on I think, Marshall and Scruggs to hit a couple threes. Today, obviously, it wasn't their day from the outside, but you know, if Xavier can be there or thereabouts with what Villanova does from the three-point line, they got a great chance to win the game. The problem is they just can't have one of those games where Nova hits 16 or 17 threes because they're dead. So,
One interesting thing to watch, Xavier really didn't play much of Wellage in that second matchup. Cole Swider played 15 minutes today. I would bet every minute that Cole Swider's on the court, Ryan Wellage will be on the court for Xavier.
That's a battle of titans.
Yeah. Well, and Villanova doesn't have a great answer for Najee Marshall either. We've seen that. He's pretty confident going to the rim against them. So that's something to watch too. If he is healthy and you know has his win tomorrow, that'd be huge as well.
Yeah. Little Dana and Victory podcast exclusive. I do not know what uniform Xavier will be wearing. However, I do know they will not be the blue Running Man uniforms. They did not make the trip to New York, so that means you're either going blue or black. They just lost their most recent game in regular blue. They've been god-awful in the black uniforms. I don't know what direction they're going.
All right. Well, that was...
Okay.
There you go.
Well, obviously, if the Muskies do get past Villanova, we will try to record something. Probably end up being Saturday morning, I suspect, for the final. If not, I guess we will await Xavier's postseason fate and probably get back to you after the pairings for the postseason tournaments are announced on Sunday.
Damn. I would say today probably locked in an NIT berth.
Yeah, I think that's probably the case. So hopefully they'll play the Wolf Raiders of Wright State, and I can watch Tyreek Jones and Zach Hankins dunk all over Loudon Love's fat ass.
You're an angry person.
Totally rude.
Dan, I don't want to overstep my boundaries, but are you guys running like a child torture chamber over there, or what's the deal?
Now they're in the bathtub. I can't believe this microphone is good enough. You can hear them. They're like a floor below me. But
oh yeah, they were getting after it. I just felt like we had to address it because there were some times where it got pretty serious, and I was like, I don't want them to think like Snow has illegitimate child.
No. We've already had issues with people talking in the background on Snow's end of this call.
Yeah. I didn't want that to get confused again because Snow's personal life has really been dragged through the mud recently.
There's no end to it. All right. I'm good. That's all I wanted to say.
All right. You've been listening to a special post-game edition of the Dane and Victory podcast, only available on MusketeerReport.com. For Dan and the legend Brian Snow, I'm Rick. Thanks for listening, everyone.